The little wee bear looked at his bowl.
Somebody has been tasting my porridge and has eaten it all up.
And joining us right now is Dustin Diamond, also known as Screech on Saved by the Bell, but now known as the bass player and one of the members of a great new group that's called, are you ready for this, folks? Salty the Pocket Knife. I'm not kidding.
Where, Salty, me money?
Salty the Pocket Knife. Now, where did that come from, Dustin?
Tell you the truth, I wish I had a great, fantastic story for it, but we were just in a band practice one day and mulling over a bunch of different names, and our singer Rosebud popped out with Salty the Pocket Knife, and it just kind of stuck. I mean, we all pretty much liked it, equally, and it pretty much stuck. I think it was better than the name Cream Feet.
Mm-hmm. And of course, a couple members of the band were in a group that was called Bug Guts.
Yes.
So that was another good one. Yeah, I guess that the name of the group is not as important as the sound, and the sound is great. Rosebud has a great voice. Then you guys kind of remind me of the early Mothers of Invention type stuff.
Well, thank you. That is definitely a compliment. Zappa, I think, is a definite influence of everybody in the band. Everyone pretty much... hails Frank as one of the geniuses of our time, and I think that aside from that, I think that's a definite tie that binds, and there's a definite link with that type of music. But from other influences, we get more of a variety. I mean, our drummer Evan has more of a jazz background. I'm more of like a I listen to a lot of Mr. Bungle and John Zorn and bands like that. Scott and Rosebud listen to, a lot of, the Residents and things like that. So we get a very different range of eclectic music. And I think that one of the greatest things is being able to have fun playing this type of music. But the resulting sound isn't so out there and so weird that it loses people, I mean, we're doing odd time signatures, but yet, like our song Red Panties 145, that's, it's very easy for people to latch on to, and it's not in, your standard cookie cutter 4/4 time.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Porno Gasoline. I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, great.
We played a little bit about that, of that before the interview, and it's very interesting, tune. I want to talk to you a little bit about acting. Obviously, you've put that on hold to do music, and obviously you must have enjoyed music all along and wanted to do this, but let's talk a little bit about your acting career and about Screech, which when people think of Saved by the Bell, that's the character they think of.
Well, it's such a weird thing that, to do a show and not know if it's going to be successful or not, because when we started, we were the first live-action Saturday morning show for kids, and and doing the show, people know me for that now, but they got to remember that, I was an actor, going into this. I wasn't always the Screech character, so, I've been acting since I was 8, and, I didn't get the part of Screech until I was 11, and, for that 3-year time period, I was, auditioning for a lot of other things. I have had bit parts and in, you know, movies, and I've done, you know, countless commercials and guest appearances on, you know, television sitcoms and things like that. But to be able to land a series, I mean, it's pretty much every actor's wish and dream. I mean, that's, you know, that's a definite hurdle to get over, and it's a definite accomplishment. They auditioned more than 50,000 kids for the part of Screech.
Wow.
And I was the lucky one to be able, you know, to get the part. And I guess do it well, because people, you know, remember my character so much. But the thing is that we were going up against Bugs Bunny, yeah, quite literally. And it sounds funny to most, but if you think about it, Bugs Bunny had an established, you know, audience of over 60,000, or not 60,000, over 60 years of popularity. And we beat him out. You know, we beat Bugs Bunny out.
Hmm.
And now there's every type of Saved by the Bell clone, you know, pretty much that you can think of, and sadly they're all by the same producer, you know.
Mm. One of them is that Boy Meets World sound is very much like it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, Peter Engel Productions, Peter Engel was our executive producer. He put out California Dreams, Hang Time, City Guys, Malibu CA, you name it. There's all kinds of different clones of Saved by the Bell, including Saved by the Bell, the new class. But I say, hey, you know, to be able to be part of something that we didn't think was going to make it, you know, that much. We never expected it to have the popularity that it did. And then to look back and say 10 years later that I did a 10-year successful TV show run, I mean, Cheers, which was one of the most successful shows of all time, did 11 years.
Right.
I mean that's amazing.
It is amazing, and it's nice to see some of the folks from the show doing so well. Do you keep in touch with any of the folks from the cast?
Here and there. I'm pretty much mostly, you know, busy myself doing my own thing, but you know, I touch base with people, you know, everybody now and then, just to see what everyone's up to. See, with me, it's weird because there's a lot of actors turned musician out there,
mm-hmm.
and the thing is that I, you know, I wouldn't say was a musician per se, because I wasn't a performing musician, but I've had my hand into the music jar almost forever. And I learned guitar from my dad. I actually learned classical guitar first, which, being classical guitarists, you mainly use their fingers to pick out individual strings very quickly. I can't use a pick at all. I mean, a pick is, it's just too complex for me. It's like relearning how to write with the other hand. But I can use my fingers really well.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I picked up the bass and just fell in love with it. You know, it was sort of natural, you know, for me. So I would say that all these actors that, you know, did a successful, you know, either movie or had a successful career in some way, that turned musician, I wouldn't really put myself in that category, though it appears that way on the surface. Just
so you're going to take yourself away from Keanu Reeves' Dog Star and Tina Yeah, Jaded?
Yeah. I mean, Jeff Bridges has a band, and Anthony Michael Hall has a band,
yeah.
And all these other people. And, you know, and unfortunately, everyone tends to look, I wouldn't say look down upon that, but people tend to try and do what's already been done, you know what I mean? Or I guess it's not bad, it's just they do what they like, but I just happen to like left field eclectic music that really hasn't had a wide range of popularity now. And you know, instead of bending to it and saying, oh well, I'm just going to do what's in the top 40 pop charts, you know, whatever, we're, you know, I'm doing what I like, what appeals to me. And fortunately, every decade seems to have its sound. I mean, every, you know, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and I guess what, now we're in the 10s, I guess you'd say. But I think we're on the ground floor of this type of eclectic, I guess you'd say, alternative progressive, and truly progressive music is music that I believe that our sound grows as we spend time together, as music should. You know, I mean, if you look back at the Mothers of Invention stuff, I mean, you know, the sound from when they first got together to when they had spent, you know, so much time together, you really could follow the progress of how the band grew together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people like, and what's great is that Vinnie Colaiuta, who was probably the greatest drummer on earth, he played with Frank, you know, a lot, quite a bit. He played on albums like, you know, Joe's Garage and things of that nature. And he taught my drummer, Evan Stone, which is a great thing to have to look back on, because when Evan met Vinny, I think that he had something that a lot of people tend to wish they have or tend to want to have and should have whenever they're going to learn something from someone who's as great a teacher as he is, or as great a player as he is, and that is being able to ask the right questions. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's some people out there, I mean, in any field, that are really great at something, but they may not necessarily be a good teacher. And then if you find a good teacher, you may not learn what you could learn if you didn't ask the right questions and unlock the right answers, you know.
You get some really talented people. I mean, guitarist Scott Ireland does a great job, and Rosebud, fantastic singer.
Yeah, I'm really fortunate to have found such talented players. And do you know the history of how we met?
I do, actually, but the folks listening don't, so you can tell them if you like.
Okay. Yeah. Well, tell you what. Tell me what you know, and I will fill in the gaps.
Okay. Well, I know that Ireland and Rosebud were together in the band that we talked about earlier, and then through them, they met with Evan, and eventually Evan and you became friends through Chess, and then all of you decided to get together one night and see what happened, and I guess you jammed for like 9 hours or something like that.
Yeah, that's actually pretty close. I had a friend named Scott who was not the Scott Ireland that was in the band, but my buddy Scott was, he's a pretty strong chess player, and I've always liked chess. And he and Evan have been good friends for a long time, and used to be roommates, and used to play chess all the time. And Scott was a drummer, but not serious enough to where he would actually have been part of this project. And he, you know, Scott had come over a lot, and I didn't know Evan at the time. We played a lot of chess, and we used to play at the same tournament hall. And because he knew about all my music, and you know, I kept, you know, haggling him about, hey man, you know, we should get together. I want to hear you drum sometime. I want to hear your ability. He said, nah, you know, you should hear my buddy Evan. He's really good. And I didn't know Evan. I didn't know if he could play or what his capability was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you go into Guitar Center. There's, you know, everybody wants to be a guitarist and everybody wants to be a drummer. You know, there's so many people that just remain at that level where it's kind of like stars in the eyes, but never really goes further than that. And so, you know, here I am real serious about it, and he brings, you know, Evan along, and Evan and I start playing chess, so we immediately, you know, build this friendship that way.
Right.
And I kept, you know, nagging at Evan, saying, hey man, you know, we should play sometime, whatever. And Scott took me to go see Evan play, and after seeing him once, I was like, wow, this guy is great. I saw him playing at a live jazz club, and he was playing with these really heavy guys that were playing like deep, you know, deep jazz stuff. You know, it's like these guys knew the jazz fake book,
mm-hmm.
you know, front and back, and you know, the bass player was playing like Jaco Pastorius, and so I'm going, wow, this guy's pretty good, but you know, would he be into the type of music I'm into? So immediately I started sharing with Evan over a period of a few weeks. I started sharing with him all of my favorite music that was really out there, like, you know, Mr. Bungle and, you know, John Zorn and all, you know, a lot of these other strange bands,
mm-hmm.
and you know, stuff that you don't normally hear, you know, in your elevator, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he, in turn, started sharing a bunch of stuff with me. Turns out I didn't need to share any Zappa with him because he already knew Zappa. And I found out that he had just recorded an album with Scott and Rosebud on their in their band Bug Guts. They had just done their second album and had Evan do the drums on it. Well, I immediately fell in love with the Bug Guts music. I loved it. I thought it was great. He said, yeah, maybe we will get together. Now, remember, he knows who I am, and he thinks I'm an okay guy, but he doesn't know if I can play either. Because he, you know, he admittedly says, well, I was a little weirded out by the whole, you know, actor-turned-musician thing, too. Because, you know, there's so many people out there who claim, oh, I'm a musician, but can't really play a lick.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, you know, playing. He knew I liked the same type of music as he did, and that Scott and Rosebud did. So we all got together one day, and just figured we'd sniff each other out. We spent about five to seven hours together, and just pretty much jammed. I mean, we didn't really work on anything because we didn't know if, you know, if everything was going to fly or not. And after that one time, we were laughing, we were having a good time, and tell you the truth, some of the foundations for some songs that we do now came about during that time period. I mean, as raw and as simple as they may have been at the time, quickly we evolved into being on the same page, and we found that we could write very quickly with each other. Which is fantastic, because if you think about it, four people in a band, usually there's one or two people at the most that do the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And we all four write the tunes.
Yep.
I mean, we don't, it's all original stuff, and we all four are contributing to the writing, which is difficult because, you know, bands fight sometimes.
Yeah, you mentioned that some of the bands that were influential on you that you were talking about as influences. When you were growing up, what were your parents playing?
Oh, gosh. I mean, everything. Well, if you go back far enough, I mean, everything from Gordon Lightfoot to Traffic. I mean,
mm-hmm.
King Crimson. I mean, I've heard Esquivel. I've heard all kinds of different different ranges. I mean, my mom liked more of your conventional music, you know, your old classic stuff, Beatles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad liked the same type of thing too. But they didn't really listen, because remember back then we didn't have, you know, grunge and things like that. That didn't come about till like Nirvana, you know,
right,
started doing stuff. We're going back, you know, into the 70s, and so, you know, obviously Jimi Hendrix and Grateful Dead and things like that. My dad really listened to them, and, you know, Pink Floyd. I remember one day, I must have been around 6 or 7 years old. My mom and I went out to the pool. We lived in this apartment complex, and we went out to the pool, and my dad was having a feud with our neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad had just gotten these speakers called Klipshorns, and I think this ties in with I Love Lucy, but the speakers' names were Fred and Ethel, and they sat in the corners, and they were 4-foot-high speakers, and they were Klipshorns. They were, like, really, you know, fancy, expensive speakers, and for the time, they were the best. You know, it was like really the hoo-ha to have, you know, these big speakers. And and he got this great equalizer system and had it all professionally set up. You know, because my dad used to teach digital electronics, so, you know, he set this stuff up to where it was like really rocking. And the neighbor would play their music super loud, just thumping loud music all night long.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to sleep, right? And so we go out to the pool, and my dad used to turn our speakers up loud, and then they turn theirs up louder. It was it's funny now you look back on it, but it was annoying at the time. You know, I remember my dad getting really pissed. And finally, I remember me and my mom were out by the pool, and as we were walking out, we heard they were going back and forth, and they were upstairs because it was a 2-level apartment complex. And the guys upstairs turned their speaker, must have been full blast, but they didn't have the clip harness, right? So my dad had just gotten these and installed them, so he was looking forward to it. We're out by the pool, and my dad put in Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, that opens up with the heartbeat,
mm-hmm.
and he cranked the knob all the way up, and he put earplugs in,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, he must have wrapped all the all the glasses and you know, dishware and stuff like that, but the whole building was shaking, and we're out by the pool, and you could hear the and the guys never played their music that loud after that. It was great.
That's funny. You know, I'm getting a bunch of emails here as we speak, and they have questions they want to ask about your acting career. So let me get back into that again, because we're going to talk about the music still, and we're playing some of the music. And also, do you guys have a website that folks can go to visit and hear some of the samples and things?
We're on mp3.com.
Okay.
mp3.com/saltythepocketknife, one word.
Uh-huh.
And our email is actually saltythepocket, because I guess they wouldn't have it too long to put knife in, but
right.
saltythepocket@aol.com.
Okay. All right. We'll mention that. Salary. Salty the pocket knife, but it's Salty the Pocket at AOL. And someone wanted to know about your reaction when Elizabeth Barclay's Showgirls came out.
I must say, I buttered my popcorn. Yes. I don't think it was a big surprise. I mean, you know, it's being in the acting field, doing quick changes and everything else, you pretty much see everyone anyway. But it's, you know, it's a job. It pays.
She looked pretty good, though. The movie was terrible, but she looked pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she wanted to show off, her bod. But and what's funny is that, a lot of the people, you get a lot of people really putting down the film and saying, oh, man, that film sucked. It wasn't very good. But every guy went out and saw it.
Oh, yeah.
What, Jesse from Saved by the Bell's naked?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I should be in the sequel, Show Boys.
Now, Tiffany Amber Thiessen has done pretty well with Beverly Hills and all that stuff.
Tiffany's been doing extremely well. Kind of makes you wonder, is it all based on acting ability?
I don't know. Well, did you guys get along well? The cast get along well, or were the prima donnas involved?
A little bit of both. I mean, you have. I really contribute it to being a brother sister type relationship. Where you see each other every single day.
Mm-hmm.
For 10 years, and you got to remember that I get asked constantly by guys saying, oh, what was Kelly like? Oh, Kelly was so hot. Oh, those girls on that show were so hot.
Uh-huh.
Not that hot when you see them every single day for 10 years. I just tell you, the luster wears off, because it's work.
Yeah.
I mean, uh-huh. It's not easy. Anyone who's an aspiring actor who's actually been on a real television set who knows the workings of it, it's like anything else. I mean, in fact, it's actually worse than a lot of other jobs because there's a lot of politics involved.
Mm.
And where in most, let's say, corporate jobs or business jobs, you have people muscling for the, quote, star role or the, the golden spot or whatever, where in acting you have, quite literally, it's the same thing, but more obvious, because they really are going for the star spot.
Right.
So,
was there a lot of competition between you and Mark, Paul, and Mario for,
between Mark, Paul, and Mario. I mean, each guy wanted to be the hunk and everything else. And see, I'm smart enough to realize, I'm smart enough to realize that the comedy guy is the one that will last the longest.
Right.
I mean, some people say, well, why did you stay with the show when everyone else left? Well, we actually did the college years, and they hired a new director who changed all kinds of stuff. The writers were different, so the scripts weren't even the same.
Mm.
The stories were all different. The college years, we only did 19 episodes, and they canceled it. Why? Because they broke a major rule of thumb. If it isn't broken, don't fix it.
Right.
And we had a successful show, and they bring in a different director who, I'm not kidding, he told me, okay, don't do the goofy face anymore. don't do any goofy walks or you know, expressions like that. And don't crack your voice. Less is more, less is more. Yeah, tell Jim Carrey that. He was doing Ace Ventura at the time.
Yeah. Well, Screech is Screech, you know. You got to play Screech.
Well, I got to do the character that I was hired to do. I made the executives and the suits, which are hard to make laugh, I made them laugh. And you see, they hired me. I'm getting paid good money, right? Let me do my thing. And it's only supposed to be 3 months from, you know, the end of high school to college. And all of a sudden, they want me to basically not be funny, which, I'm sorry, but that just doesn't fly. To me, more is more. And the thing is that, you know, that didn't fly. And then the first season of Saved by the Bell, the new class, they had a character named Weasel instead of Screech.
Mm-hmm.
He was like their version of Screech.
Right.
And, or as some people have told me, they want to be Screech. The thing is that I never saw the first season of the new class because I was doing the college years. But they approached me and said, look, the ratings are slipping. We need you to come back in and do the Screech thing, you know, because that's, you know, we feel that would bring the ratings up. Well, I actually turned them down. I wasn't interested in it. I don't want to play Screech anymore. And then they came back with a figure, and I said,
I'm Screech.
All right. Zoinks. Yeah. So, I mean, hey, it's show business. You know, it's not.
Sure. Exactly.
It's the business part is first.
You actually were, when Saved by the Bell, the college years, which was really not a very good show, but one of the people in it was a friend of mine, and I just liked the guy a lot. He's a great guy, Bob Golic.
Oh, Bob Golic's fantastic.
What a nice guy. He was with the Patriots, and we get to be very friendly, and he's just a great guy.
His brother plays for the Dolphins.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that guy, he was I believe he was nose tackle for the Raiders for like 15 years or something.
Yeah, he was a defensive tackle for them, yeah.
And that guy has broken so many bones and gotten so injured. He's like a mixture between Plastic Man and He-Man, you know, because he's a huge guy, but he's like really rubbery because, you know, I remember one day he was pulling on his thumb, and it looked like his thumb wasn't even attached. He goes, oh, yeah, everything in here is, like, pretty much separated and cracked. He's telling me all these funny stories, like, you know, sometimes in the tackles, you know, everybody's laying in this big pile, you know, and you'll hear guys talking to each other, like, you know, hey, man, where'd you get those shoes? Oh, I just did a spot for Nike or whatever. I just did a spot for this. And really? How much were they? $180. I'll touch on the next tackle, you know. Things like that. Like, oh, I didn't know in the tackle these guys are talking about footwear.
That's funny. You know, he's just a real nice, down-to-earth guy.
Yeah. You know where I just saw him recently? Sometimes me and my dad like to watch the strongman competition.
Right.
Oh, you get some insane stuff on there. He was narrating, doing the color commentary on a thing where the guys are lifting this bar. I forget what it's called, but there's this bar attached to a basket which has 600 pounds of rocks and like boulders in it. And they've got to walk this. They got to lift it with their forearms and then walk it around in the circle as far as they can. And you know, like the first three guys are, you know, going maybe 20 feet at the max. Some guys only like 8 feet or so. One guy couldn't even lift it. Then this one guy goes around like 2.5 times or something insane like that.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Well, that's the kind of thing that you and I can admire from afar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You won't see me lifting those 600 pounds of rocks.
You won't see me lifting 6 pounds of rocks. So I'm just not into that type of thing. But I do work out at the gym. You go to the gym, too, and work out? Or
I do the Bowflex.
Yeah.
My dad got one of those Bowflex things. And, you know, there are people out there that have their preference for free weights, or they have their preference for total gyms or Bowflexes or whatever else. I say any exercise works because, you know, in order to stay on a program and not falter and fall to the wayside is, for me, a task because it's like, you know, it's work. It's physically strenuous, which is good, but it's just got to stay into it. You know, I like to be creative, and like music, playing the bass doesn't really build mass. You know?
The drums actually do help with that.
Yeah.
You do the drums enough.
Well, actually, our drummer, he for a long time really wanted to get his hi-hat down. So he practiced with his hi-hat hand, his right hand, so much that actually now he looks like a fiddler crab. But we like it. It's good for press photos.
Now, you mentioned before about you know, not wanting to really trying to get out of acting. Have you were approached for? Have you been approached for a reunion movie at all? By Saved by the Bell?
No, not yet. And you know, if they, I probably wouldn't do it. I mean, even if they came back with a handsome figure, you know. I mean, I did that once, and I think the Screech thing is done.
I'm gonna put it to rest, huh?
I did my work. Time to move on. Mm. And I think music is a great way to go. I love playing with the band members. I love playing the music on stage. It's just such a great feeling. The paradox that goes to work every time for me is that I love the second. There's a split second right when you hit that last note of the last song, and you know it's over. Because while you're playing, you know that the end's coming.
Yeah.
And it's a rush, so it's like, the paradox is that it's sad. You know, it sucks for me, you know, to know the end's coming, because it's like, I want to play more. It's like, oh, man, it's over.
Mm.
But our set's set up in such a way that it builds to where people are, like, really amped up, and then that second that last note hits, it's just the greatest moment, you know, to where, you know, I like looking out and seeing people bob to the music, but at some points not really sure, you know, what the rhythm is or what the beat is, you know, at every moment, but yet the pulse is there, so they're not lost, they're not thrown to the side, and it's just great, you know, hitting that last note for me. And
now we have the demo, the Salty the Pocket Knife, a little short demo with a few songs on it. When is an actual CD coming out? Have you talked to some record companies about it?
Right now we're pretty much shopping. We're doing some negotiations. I got a buddy of mine, we're pretty much we're trying to get the album done on spec, or you know, work out a deal that way to where we don't have to fork any out of pocket money really to spend the kind of time in a studio that we need to record and do it, not, you know, not half, you know. So we want to do the full blown boogie, boogie, and get the whole thing done and get it done the right way.
It's great stuff. I like it. I think it's going to get a lot of play on alternative radio stations. It's Salty the Pocket Knife, and if you want to send an email over to Dustin, say hi to him. You just send it to saltythepocket@aol.com, and there's a number that I found here that they can actually hear the music on the phone. Here's samples of Salty the Pocket Knife. Call register info line. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I know that we've done an interview for the register, but I'm not really, not sure if that's still on there.
Oh, okay. I won't give it out then.
They can play two of our songs on the MP3 site.
Okay, MP3.com. Yep. All right. Well, I want to wish you guys a lot of luck, and when the CD does come out, we'll talk again.
Thanks a lot, man. Hey, what is your favorite song, by the way, on our demo?
I like the second one. Pour No Gasoline.
Wow, great, man.
I like the intro. I thought it's a really cool intro. It's a real different, but I like all three songs. They're all different, and they're all different than stuff you're going to hear on the radio everywhere. So,
true.
I like stuff that's different. I don't like stuff that's homogenized.
Well, thanks a lot, man. That's a great compliment.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, and good luck with everything. And Screech was cool, but Salty is even better.
Salty will be better. And I just ask that everyone check out MP3, download the song, spread it to friends, you know, tell people to go there and see a side of me that's not, that's definitely not the character.
Well, you know, I can't let you go without doing a little bit of Screech stuff for us.
I'll give you a Zoinks as the cream of the crop. You ready?
Sure.
Zoinks!
Well, I'm glad they've buried Screech then, because I'd rather hear Salty.
Me
but,
too.
Nice stuff, and also Rosebud, very interesting looking woman, and great voice.
You know what's funny is that
great voice.
Scott and Rose together. Scott's 6'6". And Rosebud's 6 feet, so together they're 666. Ooh, scary.
I was thinking of a new name for the group, actually, though.
Huh.
Rosebud Ireland Diamondstone.
Rosebud Ireland Diamondstone.
Rosebud's Ireland Diamondstone.
Hmm, we will mull this over.
Yeah, I'm sure. Take care. We'll talk to you another time. Bye-bye.
Bye.